Okay, let's go down the left-hand side. The flow chart. Genesis, Exodus, Numbers, Joshua, Judges, 1 and 2 Samuel, 1 and 2 Kings. Back up to the top, supplemental books. Job off of Genesis, Leviticus off of Exodus, Deuteronomy off of Numbers, Ruth off of Judges. Then down next to 2 Samuel is 1 Chronicles. Below 1 Chronicles would be 2 Chronicles. And the little bitty one, which should be twice the size and shouldn't be there, is Lamentations. Then let's go back up to Saul, David, Solomon, the United Kingdom. We just finished those three dudes. David wrote
Psalms.
Solomon wrote
Psalms.
Checkamundo. Now we're going to get the split kingdom after the holidays. In the northern kingdom, which has come to be known as Israel, two prophets, Amos and Hosea. Ah. And then on the southern kingdom, which is known as Judah, we have jumping monkeys in zoo.
Have
Jesus. Joel, Micah, Isaiah, Zephaniah, Habakkuk, and Jeremiah. Oh, she missed the quiz. We'll have a private session afterwards. So you got those Joel, Micah, Isaiah, Zephaniah, Habakkuk, and Jeremiah. Jumping monkeys in zoos have Jesus. That was her little acrostic, and it's perfect. Exile in Babylon is Daniel and Ezekiel. The return from exile is Ezra and Nehemiah. And off of Ezra is the book of
Esther.
The post-exilic prophets are Haggai and Zechariah. And the out-of-town, or in Malachi, excuse me, forgot Malachi. Out-of-town dudes, Jonah, Nahum, and Obadiah. So just for the heck of it, they're worth what? 2.25 points each? 2.25. Add them up. However many you missed times 2.25. Subtract that from 100. You may have to get your calculators out. And let's see how we did. We'll say 90 and above is an A. So where's my A's? We got some A's? Yeah.
Second time taking.
Good job. We got some B's? B's, we got a B's, B's, good. C's, we got a few C's, and we won't discuss the rest. Okay, again, my purpose of this is, it is my own personal conviction that if you have that in your head, it really helps you when you dive into the Old Testament. So if you're not quite sharp on it, keep at it, a little more time, you'll get it. So, our quiz. We good? Okay, we're ready to start lesson number 11, the city of David, Jerusalem. I was tempted to come in and sing, Jerusalem, Jerusalem. Tremendous, incredible city. And the way I approached it to teach it today is we're going to look at it as David's Jerusalem, then Solomon's Jerusalem, and then down through the ages a little bit with just a smattering of how it looks today. Can you do the clicky thing and get me, oh, here it is, and I'm clicking to, say it again.
VGA.
Mm-hmm. There it is. And what happens after a little bit?
There you go.
Hey, very good. Well, let's start with David's Jerusalem. When David became king, when he first reigned, his reign was in Hebron. And Hebron is 20 miles southwest of Jerusalem. Lots of things happened in that area. Many of the early prophets were buried in the cave of Machpelah, Abraham and his wife and so on. Caleb asked for Hebron when the spies went in and they came back out. Joshua and Caleb were the only two that said, yep, there's giants in the land, but we can take them. Caleb asks for a specific mountain to be his inheritance. That was the area of Hebron. And so when David first became king, he reigned for 7 years in Hebron. Now, at the end of those 7 years, David realized he was a little displaced. He wasn't centrally located to his kingdom. And so he wanted to move his capital to a place where all of the people of the United Kingdom can be served. And so Hebron was too far to the south. He chose an area that has come to be known as Jerusalem. Now, a group of people called the Jebusites lived in a small little enclave at that time. And they're mentioned several times in our Bible as the sons of Canaan in Genesis and again in 1 Chronicles. A very warlike kind of people. They organized a conspiracy against Joshua at one point. They were led by a nasty king who didn't like the Israelites. And they were not driven out. When Joshua took the land, he should have driven them out, and he didn't do so. Their capital city was called Jebus, J-E-B-U-S. It later became known as Jerusalem. The name Jerusalem comes from two words, Jeru, meaning foundation or establishment, and Salem, meaning peace, or the establishment of peace. Now let's stop just for a second and ask ourselves the question. Today, nor any other time in its history, was Jerusalem really the center of peace? Is it today? Most definitely not. And if you go back through history, and we're going to do a little of that today, there are very few little places where you could say, oh, there's a moment when there was peace in the land and Jerusalem was the capital city. Most of the time, the city has been under siege of one kind or another, in one kind of a conflict or another. But, and there's a punchline to that we'll get to in the end of our lesson today. Go to 2 Samuel chapter 5, and let's get a peek at David conquering the city so it could become the capital city of Israel. 2 Samuel chapter 5. 2 Samuel 5. So the king and his men, let me back up to verse 4. David was 30 years old when he became king. He reigned 40 years. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months. And in Jerusalem, he reigned over all of Israel and Judah 33 years. So verse 6 now. The king and his men marched to Jerusalem to attack the Jebusites who lived there. The Jebusites said to David, "You will not get in here." And then they make a little funny here. "Even the blind and the lame can ward you off." In other words, you know, it ain't going to take much to keep you out of here. They thought, David cannot get in here. Nevertheless, David captured the fortress of Zion, which is the city of David. On that day, David said, "Anyone who conquers the Jebusites will have to use the water shaft to reach those lame and blind who are David's enemies." And that is why they say the blind and lame will not enter the palace. And then it goes on to say he took up residence in this city. Jerusalem is a city that is strategically located. It's on a hill, and it has the Kidron Valley to the east and the southeast. It has the Hinnom Valley to the west and the southwest. Now, I got a picture for you here. This is pretty much modern Jerusalem, not entirely, but pretty much. But the thing I wanted you to see, everybody can go to the Dome of the Rock, so you know it's up on the platform of the old city. We'll talk about that in a few minutes. But down below it, let me just glance, yes, this area right here is the city of David. That's the portion that he actually conquered. This section right here, and there are tons of archaeological digs to this day going on in this section right here, off of the walls, off of the Temple Mount, and down into the valley. Now, if you were in Jerusalem, and you were sitting up on, if you wanted to retrace the steps of Jesus the night he died, for example, you would have him coming out one of the gates of the old city, probably the Eastern Gate, across the brook of the Kidron Valley, up onto the mount on the other side. Now, on the other side, looking down, there's a valley between. Now, there's also a valley down this way on this side. This is the Hinnom Valley. This is the Kidron Valley. The Hinnom Valley was used as a city dump. And in fact, when we take the word Gehenna and do some work in the New Testament translating it hell, it's coming out of the idea that there was an everlasting fire in the city dump just outside the city gates where they took care of their trash, where the worm never dies, the fire never goes out, etc. So that's the valley of the Hinnon along that side, the valley of the Kidron on the other side. There was a unique water supply out of the spring of Gihon. And when David conquered the city of Jerusalem, he used an interesting way to get into the city. Now, the Jebusites said, hey, you know, you ain't getting in here, even if we were blind and lame, you ain't getting into our city. In 1 Chronicles, remember 1 Chronicles parallels the stories in 1 and 2 Samuel, because it's all about the tribes or the nation of Judah. In 1 Chronicles, it talks about that his main man, Joab, was one of those that stepped to the plate and said, yep, I'll get us in there. And he got them in there through a water shaft where the water came from the spring of Gihon. There's been a lot of study done about how they got into the city of Jebus, or the city of the Jebusites. They think through the water shaft, and the Hebrew word tisnor has been translated many times water shaft, and they think that's how they got in. However they got in, it could have been that way. They could have used grappling hooks up over the top of the walls. However they got in, David's superiority, using Joab as his leader, they got in and conquered the city. Now, when they conquered the city, they began to take up residence. And let's look at 1 Chronicles for a minute. 1 Chronicles 11. And get a sense of what they did once they took over the city. First Chronicles 11. In verse 6 of 11... Well, let's get the same set. Verse 4. We'll start at 11:4. 1 Chronicles 11:4. David and all the Israelites marched to Jerusalem, that is Jebus. The Jebusites who lived there said to David, you're not going to get in here. The blind and lame comment. Nevertheless, David captured the fortress of Zion, which is the city of David. And David had said, whoever leads the attack on the Jebusites will become commander-in-chief. And Joab went up first, so he received the command. And through the story of David's life, you see Joab as his military leader. Verse 7, David then took up residence in the fortress, so it was called the City of David. He built up the city around it, from the terraces to the surrounding wall, while Joab restored the rest of the city. And David became more and more powerful because the Lord Almighty was with him. So he captures the city. He does so in a military kind of way, either sneaking in through the water shaft or some other means that we're unclear about. Joab being his leader, and then David establishes his leadership in the capital city of the Jebusites. Now, one of the first things he wants to do is what? What has he got to get into the city to make it really important? He's got to get the ark there first. Yeah, the tabernacle. He's got to get the ark physically in location. So if you're in 1 Chronicles, turn over to chapter 13, and you're going to see that he's going to work really hard to get that ark back. Now, there's an interesting story associated with moving the ark. Somebody tell me.
They dropped it on the way, and the guy tried to save it, but then he got killed because he wasn't supposed to touch it.
Correct. They're moving it, and unfortunately, as they're moving, they in verse 7 of 1 Chronicles 13, they move the ark from Abinadab's house on a new cart with Uzzah and Ahio guiding it. David and all the Israelites were celebrating with all their might before God, with songs and harps and lyres and timbrels and cymbals and trumpets. They're wigging out. When they came to the threshing floor of Kidon, Uzzah reached out his hand to steady the ark because the ox stumbled. Now I ask you, wasn't that a nice thing to do? The ark's going to fall. And the ark is made of wood overlaid with gold. Maybe it wouldn't have broken up, but it certainly could have gotten bent on the top of the ark. And we're going to do a big study on this when we come back from the holidays. You know, there are seraphim or angels on top of it with made of gold. They could have got all demolished or even broken off. What's the big deal? What is the big deal?
Nobody can touch it.
Yeah. In Exodus 25, keep your finger in Chronicles, but go back to Exodus 25 for a second. if you're reading through your Bible and you come to this section of the Bible, which I've just gone through, it's like, oh, ho hum, Lord, how many times can you tell me how to overlay this and stick that and pole goes here and which beaver skin goes where? And it's like, come on. But in chapter 25, verses 14, 15, etc., the Bible says this. Verse 10, you know, have them make an ark, and he gives them all the specifics for it. And then he says in verse 12, you cast four gold rings for it and fasten them to its four feet with two rings on one side and two rings on the other. Then make poles of acacia wood, overlay them with gold, insert the poles into the rings on the side of the ark to carry it. The poles are to remain in the rings of this ark. They are not to be removed, etc. Okay, now there are very specific directions to how to carry that ark. Uzzah's just doing a nice thing. The thing's going to, you know, whoever the oxen were, they stumbled, they hit a hole, they hit a rock, whatever. It's going to fall off. He reaches up and touches it, but it shouldn't have been on a cart. It should have been being carried with the poles. And you say, well, gee, Lord, you're getting a little picky here. What's wrong with the cart? What's the answer to that? I had a conversation with a little girl in my office yesterday on this very issue. What's your answer? Not Uzzah, but the rule thing. Yes.
Just because that's the rule.
God's very specific.
That's just obedience.
A rule's a rule. When the little kids walk down the hallway here, which side of the hallway do they walk down?
The right.
Why?
So they don't run into people on the left.
Is it more spiritual to walk on the right-hand side? Why do we drive on the right-hand side? Why don't we drive on the left-hand side?
Order.
Order. If we were all choosing, would there be chaos? Yes. I like the right, you like the left. Is one right and one wrong? Was one correct and one in error? When we were in Great Britain, Brianna goes, why are they driving on the wrong side of the road? And I said, it's not the wrong side of the road, it's the other side of the road. Is one right, correct, and the other incorrect? No, it's just order. God is a God of order. New Testament tells us that. And if you're reading through your Bible, just a casual glance through, you know, Exodus, Leviticus, and Numbers, you will not miss that God is a God of order. So when he said, carry it with poles, he meant carry it with poles. And so when they get to carrying it in a cart, they have a small problem, they back up, they take some time, they repent of their whatever, and then they go back and say, okay, let's try to move that thing again. And when they move it this time, they move it properly. And it gets to, now we're back in First Chronicles. So in verse of chapter 15, rather, the ark actually gets to Jerusalem. Go to chapter 16. And we get to chapter 16, verse number 1. It says, they brought the ark of God and they set it inside the tent that David had pitched for it, and they presented burnt offerings and fellowship offerings before God. So the city needed the tabernacle there. In order to set up the tabernacle, they had to have the ark. In order to have the ark, they had to move it from where it was in Shiloh and bring it into Jerusalem. Now, David has sinned here, and we have to go back to 2 Samuel now, so we're moving back and forth between the two counts. In 2 Samuel 24, David does a naughty thing. And we talked about this once before. You know, he decides to count his men. Why was that a bad thing?
Right.
He just wanted to see what I got. It's kind of like, you know, I don't know, what would be the equivalent for us? Money, credit cards, size of house, age of car, style of car. Purses, where we bought our purses, jewelry, size of jewelry. By the way, these are the ones the board gave me for 30th anniversary. Nice, huh? So if it was bigger, as opposed to littler, that's the kind of thing we do, right? In his day, it would be, you know, count the army men. So he counts his army men and he gets himself in trouble for that. And so he's told to build an altar, 2 Samuel 24, verse 18. Or verse 17, when David saw the angel who was striking down the people, he said to the Lord, hey, I blew it. I, the shepherd, have done wrong. But these are but sheep. What have they done? Let your hand fall on me and my family. On that day, God went to David and said to him, go up and build an altar to the Lord on the threshing floor of Araunah the Jebusite. Now pause a second. We've talked a lot about what's the difference between David and Solomon. Here is a crystal illustration of David. David blew it. No more or less than Solomon blew it. But here's the heart of David at work. Oh, you're penalizing the people. It's not their fault. It was mine. I made a mistake. I erred. I did what was wrong. Please, nail me, not them. God responds. So now he knows he's got to build an altar. So he goes to Araunah, who was a Jebusite, who owned a threshing floor. What's a threshing floor?
It's where they separate the
wheat from the chaff. So, you know, the grinding mills thing, they throw in the wheat and they grind, and out pops the, I don't know, I've seen it work, but out pops the, what would, the chaff, and then what's left is a kernel, and then they can use the kernel, grind it up, get flour, and then make their bread. He owns a threshing floor, so they throw it all in a place and sort it all out. It's a specific place. It's a trade center, if you will. He owns that. So David went up. The Lord had commanded him through Gad. When Araunah looked up and saw the king and his officials, I'm in verse 20. When he saw the king and his officials coming before him, he went out and he bowed down before the king with his face to the ground. Araunah said, "Why has my lord the king come to his servant?" Now, he's a Jebusite. So at this point, the Jebusites have acknowledged David's now their king. All right? Why has he come? Why has the lord the king come to his servant? Middle of verse 21, "To buy your threshing floor, David answered, "so I can build an altar to the Lord, that the plague on the people may be stopped." Araunah said to David, "Let my lord the king take whatever he wishes and offer it up. Here are oxen for the burnt offering, and here are threshing sledges and ox yokes for the wood. Your majesty, Araunah gives all this to the king." Araunah also said to him, "May the Lord your God accept you." Now, pause. Good move on Araunah's part. He's got an area that could be helpful to David. He wants to set it up as the place where the offerings and the ark get built. Ultimately, the tabernacle gets positioned there. Ultimately, the temples get built up on that hill. Good job on Araunah's part. Now watch David's heart. This is another incredible glimpse into David's soul. But David the king replied to Araunah, "Nope. I insist on paying for it, or I'm paying you for it. I will not sacrifice to the Lord my God burnt offerings that cost me nothing. I am not going to take the easy road. I'm going to pay for what is given to me. Thank you so much, but whatever." So David bought the threshing floor and the oxen and paid 50 shekels of silver for them. David built an altar to the Lord there and sacrificed burnt offerings and fellowship offerings. Then the Lord answered his prayer in behalf of the land, and the plague on Israel was stopped. If you had your fingers still in, that's enough. We don't need to go back to First Chronicles. The latter part of First Chronicles then goes on to say David starts to lay out the plans for the temple. By the time you get to chapter 28, he's got it all laid out. He even starts stockpiling what he's going to need to build a permanent place. They got a tabernacle up. They got the ark and the tabernacle, but no permanent offering or place for the temple. That becomes Solomon's job. Now, the city of David, David's actual city, was only 9 to 10 acres. Now, this property right here, Stony Brook's property, actually Coast Bible Church's property, Stony Brook is on Coast Bible Church's property, this is about 5 acres. So the city of David occupied twice this size. So when you're thinking about the size of this location, I want you to think twice the size of this. Now, I put a handy-dandy little map in your notes, which you have a smaller version of what I have. And I'm going to show you some other things here in a second. But this particular picture is helpful because you can see, if you start in the top right-hand side of it, you have where the tabernacle is. You see up in the top right-hand corner, there's your tabernacle on the top of the hill. With me? So there's your tabernacle. That's going to become the site for the temple, but right now it's just a tabernacle. So that's Araunah's threshing floor. He goes up, buys it. Tradition and most scholars believe that is where Abraham was ready to offer Isaac, on that same exact spot. Coming down the hill now, okay, so coming down that hill, the next item is David's actual palace. That's David's palace. Then coming down any further is what he calls his fortress, the citadel. So we've got the tabernacle in the top right-hand corner, then David's palace is the next one, the citadel is the next one. See? Doop.
Yeah.
With me?
Mm-hmm.
And then the rest of it is the city of David. This entire footprint is 9 to 10 acres. Not so big.
No.
Not so big. Now, it's sitting on a topography that looks like that. The hills of Jerusalem are kind of like that. Here's the Valley of Hinnom and the Valley of Jehoshaphat coming by. The Mount of Olives over on this side. And then you're going up a hill from down here, City of David right here. By the time you get to the top, which is about 2,400 feet above sea level, that's what we call Mount Moriah or the Temple Mount. So we've got the City of David down here. We've got the Mount of Olives on this side. Eventually, when the temple gets built, you're looking down on the temple. And there's where the City of David was, right there. Now, in your notes, I gave you a cross-section of that. Your handy-dandy cross-section. You feel like you're in college?
Mm-hmm.
I had fun putting this one together.
Mm-hmm.
If you consider that this is a slice of this, okay? So you just slice it. That's what you're looking at in that top chart. The city of Jerusalem as seen from the south. So on the right-hand side, Mount of Olives. Between the, we'll call it the Temple Mount, between the Temple Mount, which on this one is marked the Mosque of Omar, the Kidron Valley. And then you've got the actual Temple Mount. If you were in Jerusalem today and you were looking at this, off to your left is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, where people believe that he was actually crucified, and then the walls of the city, and then back down to the Valley of Hinnom. You getting the flow here? Hi, Mr. Buck. The fact that I'm ready to pass out is bothering people. That's what you're looking at. Slightly different, but the same thing that's on your notes. So it's a slice looking from the south. This right here is where the City of David was built. 9-10 acres. The Gihon Springs, where they got their water. Don't look at him, look at me. You guys are worse than the children.
I don't see the ark.
Goodbye. The Kidron Valley. Mount of Olives on that side. Here's the Temple Mount, and then the rest of the city. You with us?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anybody have any trouble so far?
Is the Kidron Valley from the other map the same as the Valley of Jehoshaphat?
Yes, very similar. Yes, the answer is yes. Okay, now, what I wanted to do was I wanted to also show you in your notes on the bottom of page 3 what each of the cities look like versus the way it is now. So on the bottom of page 3, which I don't have on my slides, I have, yes.
Sorry, this is David's palace overlooked the tavern.
Where does it say David's at?
It's on this one right here. Is that? I thought that you said the tabernacle and then the palace and then the citadel.
Correct, they are wrong. Hold on, let me look.
They're wrong.
This is not me. Where are we? Showing David's the tabernacle pitched on the threshing
right.
Floor.
Center right.
David's palace center right overlooked the tabernacle.
Correct, it's a tabernacle.
It could, if it could look good.
Overlooked it, meaning
it was higher.
It's slightly higher there. That's called the Ophel. It's slightly higher. This thing goes.
Okay.
Yeah. Good catch.
Oh,
but
so it can overlook both.
Yes.
He is higher.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Now, page 3. On your notes, bottom of page 3. Okay.
That's bottom of page 4.
Bottom of page 4. So, that's right. I had the big one. You didn't have it. Sorry. What I wanted to do is I wanted to show you the outline. Who went to Jerusalem besides me? Nobody? Oh, yes. Okay. If you went to Jerusalem today, and we're working our way up to this is what the walls look like today. of the old city, of the old city, okay? I'm working you to that. But I wanted you to see that the city of David at the time of David is just this little deal down here. He's not occupying much space. You're with me? So this is the walls of the old city today. This right here is the city of David. Mm-hmm. So David's not occupying much space. You with me? Mm-hmm.
Okay,
that's
good.
Hence the 9 acres.
Hence. All right, now we want to go to Solomon's Jerusalem. Solomon. Solomon. What does Solomon's Jerusalem look like? Okay, here's Solomon's little beauty whopper. Again, Kidron Valley to the right, Gihon Springs. Solomon's temple now is up on the mount. Solomon's going to build his temple, and we're going to spend a ton of time when we come back about Solomon's temple. But on your notes, I put a little charty deal looking like that. You got that one?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. You can see where the city of David fit in the bottom portion. I'll say the bottom left-hand section. You see it?
Mm-hmm.
And then we got to the Ophel, and we're keeping going now. So he's expanding the borders. So the walls are getting larger as he goes up the hill, up and down the hill, but ultimately up the hill. And he places a palace next to the temple. And ultimately, he's going to build Solomon's temple up on the top portion where Arunah's threshing floor was for David.
Was that in between the palace and the tabernacle of David?
In between the palace and the tabernacle of David. No, where the tabernacle was. Up.
Even past that.
Correct. Up.
Up directionally, but lower than the palace, right?
No.
It's higher than the palace.
It's higher than the palace.
It's north of it. It's just north of it.
Look at the next little charty deal, which is trying to give you some additional sense of that. Solomon's city is extending the city northward from the original site, and there built his magnificent temple. His royal residence was nearby. Well, they're not sure exactly where, by the way. Some charts, like the one I showed you in a second ago, showed it right next to the temple. Most people don't believe that. They believe it's further down a little bit, down this way a little bit, not directly adjacent to it, but they don't really know. Yes?
How much is left of, like, our...
None. Okay. They're arguing whether there really was a city of David, period, during David's time. But there's been some archaeological stuff recently in the old section, really neat reading. And as recently as a year and a half ago, they found something and went, oh, well, maybe the Bible was right. So anyway, shock, the Bible was right. But you can't walk in there and go, oh, yeah, I can see it. Yeah, here's David's. No. Now, the next picture looks like this. Trying to use that same outline of the old city today, trying to show you what it looked like now when Solomon got there. You see, he's encroaching. He's getting more. You with us?
Mm-hmm.
You can kind of orient yourself. There's the city of David down there.
Mm-hmm.
And he's going north. He's filling it in with where the temple is. And he's also going west, filling out further this direction. With me?
Mm-hmm.
Solomon's got money. Solomon can build. Solomon's taxing. Solomon's doing his shtick. Okay, now, in history, Solomon, at the end of his reign, the kingdom falls apart. We're going to go to a divided kingdom. The Boam boys are going to come over, Rehoboam and Jeroboam. 12 tribes to the north, 2 tribes to the south. They're going to run for many, many years as a divided kingdom. We're going to talk all the way through that, the prophets preaching during that time. And at a certain point, they're going to be wiped out, that is, the top 10 tribes, by Assyria. Assyria doesn't haul people away, it just kind of kills them off. Years later, the Babylonian kingdom comes, and it hauls people away. So it actually destroys the temple, hauls away people, Daniel, etc., and they go live in Babylon. The stories of Esther happen, or the story of Esther happens while they're in captivity. When they return with 3 leaders, Nehemiah, Zerubbabel, and Esther, Ezra. Ezra, Nehemiah, and Zerubbabel. And Nehemiah is charged with rebuilding the wall around the city. Thus, hence your next chart. Here is what Nehemiah restored and what Jerusalem is starting to look like in, well, I'm going to skip Hezekiah and go to Nehemiah. Okay? So now, here's the walls of the old city as it is today. But you can see that Nehemiah, if you compared Nehemiah's to Solomon's, not a whole lot more. They don't have any money. And when they rebuild the temple, it's called Zerubbabel's temple, it is peanuts compared to Solomon's. In fact, the Jews don't even count it. Solomon's was temple number one, Herod's was number two. They don't even count Zerubbabel's. I thought that was so funny. When I was in Jerusalem, I said, now the second temple, Zerubbabel's temple, no, second temple, Herod's. No, second temple, Zerubbabel's. No, no Zerubbabel's. I'm not even going to talk about it because it didn't have any splendor. But you can see that the size of the city and the parts that were being rebuilt, Nehemiah's wall, etc., not that much different in Nehemiah's time. You still with me? Have I scared you all off? Say no, because I'm having fun. Okay. So
this is the first, Solomon's temple is the first. When it gets destroyed, a lot of the Jews go off to Babylonia. They bring them off over there. Isn't that when they brought the ones that were smarter and...
Daniel and his buddies, that's the story of Daniel. That's correct.
Okay.
You're right.
So the second one is Herod builds a temple.
No, second one is Zerubbabel.
But
when they come back, the second one they count is Herod's.
Okay.
Which, thank you for mentioning that, because here we go with Herod's. So we're going to get to Herod's. Now you have Herod's temple in your notes. You with me? So now I want you to look at the existing walls as they are today and look at Herod's. What do you see? Pretty similar. Now Herod, who is a puppet to Rome, and when we get to the temple, I'll spend time trying to make sure you understand that. He's a puppet, but he wants to curry the favor of the Jews. So in order to curry the favor of the Jews, he goes, I know what, I'll build you one of those things. What was that called? Oh yeah, the temple. He has no interest spiritually. He's not building a place for the glory of God to reside. He's building a building. He's building Empire State Building, so everybody can go to the tallest building in the world. I mean, he is just currying favor with the Jews by building a magnificent facility, not from a spiritual perspective. But at the time that Jesus is alive, we have got up on Mount Moriah a temple, an unbelievable temple. Not as unbelievable as Solomon's, but a whole lot better than Zerubbabel's. An amazing temple. Now look at the size. And you can see the city walls have expanded considerably. City of David is just this little piece down here. So we started with a little 9, 10 acres, and we got a whole lot more. You with me?
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
And that's the temple that in like 70 AD, that's the one that...
Would you quit stealing my thunder?
Yes!
In 70 AD, Herod builds it in about 40 BC. So from about 40 BC to about 70 AD, Herod's temple is there. It's the temple that Jesus visited. Yes.
Thank you.
In 70 AD, a Roman general called Titus is given the job to put down the insurrection that's happening in that area, Syria, Pompeii, and the area of the Israelites. He stomps in and he destroys Herod's temple. So much so that no rock is left on top of another rock. Now, you asked earlier, can you see anything? You can see the rocks of Herod's temple all piled up next to the current Temple Mount. But that's about the only thing you can walk up and touch. So that brings us then to the city, the old city. Well, but first, I wanted to show you this. This is the first century, common era. So this is Jesus' time, and a little after. And I really like this one because you get a sense. Here, down here, is the old city of David. Not too big, right? Then you've got it as it came up the hill. Aruna's threshing floor is up here in the top. Now that's the site of the temple. The temple's in the center. This is the temple mount, the court of the Gentiles, the court of the women, etc., etc. You've got Antonio's fortress. You've got the royal palace where Herod built his little thing. You've got the walls around the city and various gates around the city, including the eastern gate, right? This is the Valley of the Kidron, and over here is the Mount of Olives. That's what it looked like Jesus' day. Now, what does it look like today? So glad you asked me that. Today, and you have a chart that's very similar to this, you have a temple mount, which has a wall around it, okay? You have the Dome of the Rock, and you have the mosque. Interestingly, the Jews control who gets to come up on the Temple Mount. The Muslims control what happens on the Temple Mount. So you can't get up there without going through Israeli checkpoints. But you can't do anything up there unless you're a Muslim. Interesting, huh? Nice little whatever. Now, if you're looking at this, somebody tell me, where is the city of David? Down this way, right? Down this way. Everybody, yeah, my rear end's in the air, but it's down there. Now, the various gates, the Dung Gate. Now, why would that be called the Dung Gate? What's going here? What valley? Valley of Hinnon, which was the city dump. Dung. The bad stuff goes out through that gate, down to be burned. You got the Zion Gate, the Jaffa Gate, the New Gate, the Damascus Gate, you got Herod's Gate, and something here called the Lion Gate. And then here, the Eastern Gate. The Eastern Gate is blocked. It is solid. I'll get to that in a moment. It is divided currently into four quarters. This is, you know, down through the ages, how to make everybody happy. So the Armenians got a section, Jewish got a section, Christians got a section, and Muslims got a section. If you, hold that thought, if you visit the Temple Mount, you are likely to come out this way because the place where Jesus was tried is right here, and they're going to take you there. To do that, you've got to go through the Muslim quarter. Then to go through the Via Della Rosa to get over here to the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, you've got to walk through this whole section. Not real fun. I was very uncomfortable. That was the only half hour I was uncomfortable the entire time I was in Israel. I was walking from here to here. Yes, question.
I was going to say, when you visit, what quarter do you go to?
Well, stuff happens in the whole thing. I mean, you're visiting in and out. All of this is walkable. The part that's controlled is the Temple Mount. And, of course, you know, the Wailing Wall is here. And so this is all controlled. This part right here is all controlled. You have to have passes and whatever to get. You go through screening and yada, yada, yada. But here, all you can just walk it. Not really a good idea, certainly not at night. There is a tunnel that they have discovered underneath here, which takes them as close as they believe to the wall where the Holy of Holies was. And so they will walk you through that tunnel, and when you come out on the side. Tour guides don't want to do that at night. So what they do is they walk you in and walk you back out. So you're not dumping out into that quarter at night.
Why is it sketchy? I'm just curious.
Yeah. Well, because of the tension between the Jews and the Arabs, it is significant, and depending on the political climate of the moment, it's even more significant. And what happens is when it flares up, various things come under intense discussion. For example, a couple of years ago, they were doing some excavating up here. And the only ones who can do the excavating are the Muslims. So they're driving the trucks, you know, and the, what do you call those things?
Backhoes.
Thank you. I got you there, didn't I? You got that. Anyway, one of the workers was Jewish. He's a workman. He worked for the company. So they're, and he looks in and he sees something that he thinks has historical value associated with the Temple Mount. So he starts screaming, stop, 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 the backhoe. The Arab guy couldn't care less. And so he keeps with the backhoe. The Jewish guy goes over and stands in the middle of the hole so the guy with the backhoe can't smack him. And he's screaming to the guards, go get somebody. And it was a big international incident just over excavation. So... they fought over it. Anyway, okay, so there's the old city as it is today. Now, last page, I tried to give you a quick overview. This is for Bonnie. A quick just by the numbers. So, David conquers the city of David about 1000 BC. You on the last page with me? Okay. Solomon builds a temple, extends the city about 950 BC. First temple is destroyed, 586 BC, Babylonians. Nehemiah rebuilds the wall and the temple is built again, 516 BC. Herod Agrippa comes along, builds the second temple and the new city walls in about between 41 and 44 BC. Titus, the Roman general, destroys the temple in 70 AD. From 1219 and from 70 on, it was played like a ping pong ball, but certainly between 1219 and 1538, the walls of the city were rebuilt and raised over and over again. What happened during that time period? Crusades, I think. And the Muslim armies would come in and tear it down and wipe it out, and then the Christian armies would come in and rebuild and until 1538, Suleiman the Magnificent. I love that name. Suleiman the Magnificent. He built the current walls of the old city. So you say to yourself, so what, Sherry? Turn to Psalm 48 and Revelation 21. Psalm 48 and Revelation 21. Psalm 48 and Revelation 21. Got your fingers in both?
Revelation
21. So, Psalm 48, sons of Korah wrote this one. It says, great is the Lord and most worthy of praise in the city of our God, his holy mountain. Be beautiful in its loftiness, the joy of the whole earth. Like the heights of Zaphon is Mount Zion, the city of the great God. God is in her citadels and he's shown himself to be her fortress. When the kings joined forces, when they advanced together, they saw her and were astonished. They fled in terror. Trembling seized them there. Pain like that of a woman in labor. They destroyed them like the ships of Tarshish, scattered by an east wind. As we have heard, so we have seen, in the city of the Lord Almighty, in the city of our God, God makes her secure forever. Within the temple, O God, we meditate on your unfailing love. Like your name, O God, your praise reaches to the ends of the earth. Your right hand is filled with righteousness. Mount Zion rejoices. The villages of Judah are glad because of your judgments. Walk around Zion. Go around her. Count her towers. Consider well her ramparts. View her citadels, that you may tell of them to the next generation. For this God is our God forever and ever. He will be our guide even to the end. Can you do that today? No. Flip to Revelation 21. Revelation 21, verse 1. Then I saw a new heaven and a new earth, for the first heaven and the first earth had passed away, and there was no longer any sea. And I saw the holy city, the new Jerusalem, coming down out of heaven from God, prepared as a bride beautifully dressed for her husband. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, look, God's dwelling place is now among the people, and he will dwell with them. Look, studying Jerusalem is an incredible study, worthy of lots of time and attention. and tons of history, and tons of good things happened and not so good things. Things we're proud of and things we're not proud of. The Crusades I'm not so proud of. And some of the stuff we did during the Crusades, don't be wagging your, you know, whatever. But when you consider that city, and to this day, the turmoil associated with that city, and then read in Revelation 21, it ought to make you grin. There is a time when that city will mean all that in a very significant way. And someday, you and I are going to see it. Let's pray. Father, thank you for a study of your city, the history of it, the destruction of it, the rebuilding of it, the plans that you had, the fact that at one point you just met with him near a box, and you had to fill it with your glory. There was no personal relationship, only through the leaders. And yet there is coming a time, Lord, and explain to us so clearly in Revelation 21 that you're going to be our God, we're going to be with you, you're going to be among us, amongst us, living and dealing in a personal way with us. No longer will it be a temple mount. It will be a living experience with a triune God. What a thought. Thank you for the city of David. We pray this in Christ's name. Amen.